Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Wednesday, January. No, it's February. Is it February? It's February 3rd, 2016.
February
2nd again. 2015. Now I remember why I don't have you guys on the show together all the time. Kelly Gumond, how are you?
I'm well, Jeff. How are you?
I'm doing fine, except for my clear inability to read the date directly in front of my face. John Martellaro, how are you?
My voice is getting better. I hope you can tell.
Yes, you're sounding very sultry today. That's a beautiful thing. Yeah. Okay. Hey,
I'm still back at you having a hard time with the date today, so... Well, did your alarm clock wake you up with Sunny and Cher this morning?
It did, right at 6 a.m. Okay. Yeah. I have to go find a tree. I think there's a kid about to fall.
Did you grab your booties? Because it's cold out today.
Yes, I did. There's a handful of people that are totally getting what we're saying. And for everyone else, you just need to do some Bill Murray Googling and you'll be up to speed.
Yes.
Okay. So the first thing that I want to talk about today, and I say that with full understanding that we may end up talking so much we don't get to a second topic, but I'm thinking that it could happen. But regardless, Apple has this new patent out, that they've been awarded, and it's not a patent that's a big surprise, because when they filed the application, it was like a year and a half ago, we saw this thing. But now it's not just an application, it's a patent they've been granted, and this is for a technology that can sense how close your fingers are to a surface and then can sense the gestures and movements. So think of it like the exact opposite of 3D touch, where instead of sensing how firmly you're pressing on your iPhone display, it senses how much you're not actually touching the display. Which, when I say it that way, I don't think it really clears it up at all. But the idea is that you can interact with your device interfaces without actually touching something. So now we have multiple levels of I'll call it tactile interaction. We have what we've been used to for a long time, where we can do touch and multi-touch. And then with the iPhone 6S, we got 3D touch. So now it can register how firmly we're pressing. And then with this patent that Apple was just granted, it can sense that those gestures in motion, even when you're not actually touching the glass on an iPhone.
Right. So well, maybe, this is maybe, maybe recording a iPhone. Gesture, correct?
Yes. Yeah, yes, but maybe not just an iPhone, guys.
Right.
Maybe a 24-inch iPad that's floating in front of you easel style, where you're not actually touching the screen, but just moving your hands.
Sure. And for those of you playing along at home, aren't you impressed that it's legal now in Colorado? Because clearly they're getting the good stuff.
Kelly, big you business, are the Kelly. Good stuff.
So, I don't think a 24-inch iPad is where we're headed with this, but
it just makes me think of those things, because I've seen so many science fiction movies where people have large displays and they're not actually touching them. They're just working with projected images.
Maybe eventually, but I see this being a thing where, to me, it may be something that works with an iPad, but it seems like it would be more something like in front of an iMac so that you don't need a magic trackpad anymore.
Yeah, something
about
those
lines. How in front of, you know, you can wave your hand in front of the screen and you don't actually have to be touching the screen. You can still manipulate the cursor and, you know, maybe open files and navigate through folders just by putting your hand up in front of the screen. Now, I'm not going to remember the name of the thing, but you can do this now with a deal that you can hook up to your computer, hook up to your Mac.
Oh,
Leap Motion?
That sounds like the right company name.
That's what's falling into my brain. Brett Terpstra has one, which is the only reason I know anything about it.
And it uses really cameras, correct?
Yeah.
And that's a big difference with Apple system. No cameras needed.
Right. And the other thing that I sort of, like, as fun as it is to speculate about 24-inch iPads with John, the other thing I sort of want to point out here is that Apple patents lots of stuff that never goes anywhere.
Oh, sure.
And so this is just somebody probably working through an idea, and it became a valid enough idea that they decided to go get the patent on it in case it goes anywhere. And well, we know, may never see it. And
what I haven't worked out in my head yet, Kelly, is handling an iPhone while in motion. A lot of people walk with their phone, or they're sitting somewhere, or they're in a car moving, or they're walking with it, and they're touching it, and they're maybe too much oblivious to the surroundings. You know, we're supposed to train for total awareness, my karate instructor said. So I haven't worked out in my head how it is exactly you would carry an iPhone and how you would interact with the screen and how you would wave your hand and do gestures and stuff and accomplish the mission and still be able to chew gum and walk at the same time.
Right.
I'm still not visualizing that yet, technically.
Yeah, and that's why, to me, the clear choice for it is something stationary like an iMac.
Yeah.
That's at least where it would start.
Yeah, that works for me.
It sounds awesome. It sounds really interesting. I love speculating about stuff, particularly when Apple is behind it. And I want to see what this turns into, because something that we never end up doing a lot of the time is going back to those stories. Like, you know, 2 years, 2, 3, or 4 years from now, being able to see the iPhone at that point, you know, which is going to be the size of my car if current expansion theories hold true, and they're going to bring out this giant screen, and they're going to go, now you can just wave your hands in front of it and blah blah whatever, and nobody ever goes back and goes, remember how 2 years ago they filed that patent and they were talking about, we were all talking about what they were going to do with this 3D gesture stuff, here it is. So I'm curious where this is going to end up. I think it's going to be super fun. What my burning question about it is right now is how much they're going to pay Stephen Fry to be the voice of Jarvis, because I like Paul Bettany, but it should really be Stephen Fry if there is any justice in the world.
I was particularly pleased to see Jeff Hughes of Tony Stark in the article, because Tony Stark's laboratory is where I want to be.
Yeah, Tony Stark's lab would be a pretty awesome place to hang out.
Also, where we all want to be,
the liquor cabinet. Woo.
yeah, I didn't say why. I just said it was a place we all want to hang out.
Yeah. Now, the reason that I went to Tony Stark with my graphic for the article was because I was thinking about this beyond the idea of we could have some additional level of non-touch interaction with our iPhones, and taking it out to, I guess, what would be more of the stationary type computer environment. And
so Apple TV.
Well, sure, Apple TV is an option, but let's add in the technology that Apple is reportedly developing for virtual reality and augmented reality, and then create a computer interface that is immersive in that, instead of being a flat screen in front of you, it's something that could be projected around you, and yeah, and so what I was visualizing is something along the lines of the 3D holographic interface that Tony Stark has for Jarvis in his lab,
which is amazing.
Yeah, and then we get to see this also in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It's used regularly in that series, and the idea of having an interface where I can interact with objects that appear as if they're real to me, and those are now representing the elements of my computer interface is really exciting. And I don't know how that would be used effectively and practically yet, but hey, my job today is to be the idea guy.
Which we're doing. I think you're doing a fine job of that.
Why, thank you. So, my guess is that if we see anything from this patent in real world use from Apple over the next couple of years, it's going to be very rudimentary and mm-hmm. it'll be very basic gesture type stuff that we can do with future Macs and future iPhones and future iPads, probably something with Apple TV as well. Mm-hmm. But then long term, why not have something like this in the Apple Car? Why not have something like this in office interface?
I just had a thought.
Okay.
When we talk about the iOSification or the integration of iOS and OS X, we're always hung up on the distinction between pointing and exact pointing and touching. This solves that problem. The gesture-based virtual reality integrates the pointing and the touching and the manipulating nicely together so that you don't have to have that artificial separation of the two OSs anymore. Just a thought.
All right. Well, now I'm expecting we'll be getting emails and comments from listeners that are going to say, John, no, I can't have iOS and OS X merged into a single operating system.
Yes. No, 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 no. Well, and my hand up is the keyboard.
In current state, no.
Right.
No, but in the future, it does nicely solve the problem.
And for me, another thing that this proves, even like I said, even if it doesn't end up going anywhere, even if this turns out not to be like a huge fundamental part of anything that Apple's building, because we all know that there's like some place, you know, like the attic at Apple where all of the weird idea stuff is living. Like the MacBook Air that has the 4G radio in it, you know, like we know these are all things that totally exist in like one or two actual pieces. And that's all there ever were. And, you know, they all live somewhere. The thing about this that I like is what it says about Apple, which is we're still thinking up stuff. We're still trying to innovate. We're looking at all the different ways that we could do things. And we're still coming up with all these ideas that seem valid enough that we need to put patents on them in order to make sure that we are protected when we decide to get out with, you know, let this out into the world. And I really like seeing that they have good ideas about that and that they're still coming up with stuff.
It's important in the light of Brian's analysis the other day about the growth outlook for Google and mm-hmm. versus Apple and the investors' attitude about that. So this starts leading us to the idea that Apple's still thinking about many new ideas and new products for the future and intends to mm-hmm. grow. It's just that analysts aren't seeing it right now.
Right.
I predicted at the end of last year, I think that there was sort of a consolidation year for Apple, and the iPad Air 3 and maybe hopefully a new Mac Pro and an iPhone 6 SE all seem to be sort of consolidation efforts. So Apple's regrouping, and I think we'll see new exciting things in 17.
Absolutely.
I wouldn't be surprised at all. I think that Apple has some really cool products that they're working on that we have no clue what they are. And when they do finally come out, they will be products, hopefully, that investors and analysts will look at and be able to say, oh, yeah, okay, Apple is still innovating. And actually, Apple needs to do that because right now, they don't have anything that they can really show that makes the analysts happy. And when I say that, what I mean is analysts happy or at least satisfied that there's a tangible roadmap for new mm-hmm. products that lead to new growth for Apple.
And right. Hardware is hard. I mean, you don't just create magical new hardware easily. It takes a long time. Look how long it took for Apple to get the iPad Pro. We talked about it for 18 months. But there was a lot of engineering to do on that machine and getting the A9X ready for a large display and making it very fast and developing the certain elements of the hardware. And it finally came, but we couldn't be happy. We couldn't be made happy enough to get it soon enough, but it came. So we'll just have to continue to trust Apple that when they do it, it's going to be great.
That's what I'm hoping for. And I think Apple has some products coming that are going to be really exciting. That's just what they do.
Right.
So we'll see. And I'm looking at the time, and we actually have time to hit a second topic.
Talk awesome. Fast.
Okay. So here's the deal. There's this report out from University of Toronto in Canada about the state of security in health and fitness trackers. So, mm-hmm. so the wearable devices like Fitbit and the Basis Peak and,
Garmin has one. There's a Misfit Shine, the Microsoft mm-hmm. Band, the Nike Fuel.
And yeah. Apple Watch fits in yeah. with all this also. So right. What they did was they looked at several different devices, and the companies that they looked at, it was, hold on, I'll find the list. It was Apple, Fitbit, Garmin, Jawbone, Basis, Mio, Withings, and Xiaomi. And what they found was that the Bluetooth privacy and security standards that we currently have aren't being employed by these devices, except for Apple Watch and mm-hmm. And the Basis. And it makes sense that the Basis Peak would include this because Intel owns the company, and it would be bad form for them to not use their own protocols.
Right.
But once you get past that, what they found is that anyone that is tech savvy enough to go find a Bluetooth packet sniffer mm-hmm. app can sit, and the example I used in my article was sit in a coffee shop and just sniff packets, and then they can pick up these devices and get the data off of them, because the Bluetooth devices, they're always transmitting their ID. And they're also, except for the Apple Watch, using a thing that's called persistent MAC address. Mm-hmm. And Apple Watch is using like a transient, so it's a temporary address. So
right.
with a persistent,
so what they're doing is broadcasting it, and that not everything does that. So if I really wanted to, and your Bluetooth headset, for example, you had it in your bag. If it was broadcasting its address all the time, I could maybe take a hold of your Bluetooth headset from across the coffee shop.
Potentially.
If I wanted to. And yeah, if it's broadcasting all the time, it makes it a very easy target because it just keeps sort of jumping up and down going, here I am, here I am, here I am.
Which is actually what most Bluetooth devices do. Now,
right.
the thing is, doing
most of
that,
them don't have all this personal data on them, though.
Right.
My headset doesn't know how far I went today or what the route was that I took.
Right. Right. But your Fitbit or your Withings or mm-hmm. your Garmin device, whatever, it probably does know where you've been. And so since they're using a persistent MAC address, that means that whoever is hanging out in the coffee shop can then identify the same devices day after day and then start collecting data and building up profiles about whoever is using that device, which ultimately means that they can get at the data mm-hmm. that is coming out of your device, so they can intercept that. And if they so choose, if they're very clever, they can actually replace the data replace the data so that what you receive, say, to your iPhone isn't mm-hmm. what actually was recorded by your device.
Now, right.
And really, how many people are going to do that? Probably not many. Right. But
the more concerning thing is that, like, I know people who use the Nike Fuel Band, and it will track your route, and it, like, has a little picture of, like, the map, and here's the route that you took. And sometimes it's funny because, like, I have friends who will use it on a track. Like, I have a friend who near his house, he has a track, so he goes around the track. So it's just a bunch of circles mm-hmm. all in the same place, which is kind of funny to look at. But other people are like, I started at my house and I went down to the park and out and around and back again. And your fitness tracker now knows the start and end point. And if you go into the coffee shop every day and somebody in there gets hold of your fitness tracker information and sees that you start and end at the same place every single day, and that you then go from that place to the coffee shop on your bike, if you're, you know, still fitness tracking and you're riding your bike to the coffee shop, this person knows where you live. And you may not want that person to know where you live.
Right.
Well, they can find out how you live in other ways, but your habits and your patterns are what's important.
Right. But it's also, everyone listening to this podcast, I'm going to presume, because you have to find it in some way and you have to sit down and listen to it in some way. If you are that person, you are technically savvy enough to do this to a Fitbit or to any other of these trackers, the Jawbone Up, the Withing Scale stuff. If you are technically savvy enough to download a podcast, you are technically savvy enough to get this information.
Now, we're out of time, so we can't go too much deeper into this. But right. What I will say,
good. Yay, Apple Watch.
Yeah. The upside is that this is not an issue at all with the Apple Watch. Apple thought about the security from beginning to end. The data is transmitted in an encrypted format. It's not using a persistent MAC address for your Apple Watch. And so right now, the safest device for maintaining your privacy with fitness tracking is Apple Watch. Fitbit is now looking at what they can do to improve the privacy and security of their devices. So, mm-hmm. So they responded very quickly to this report. Intel is working on improving the security in the Basis products, mm-hmm. And other companies, while they haven't responded yet to the report, I'm assuming are being responsible, and they are looking at how they can improve their products too.
One would hope.
Right.
These are just the first two that have come out and said, yeah, this is what we're doing.
Right.
And we're looking into this. This is something we need to take action on.
Right. And Apple Watch is the one that's going to keep all your data safe. So there you go.
And the other thing to think about is that if you are using Apple Watch as your fitness tracker, one of the places you are probably storing that data is the health app. And one of the nice things about that is that a lot of that stuff stays behind Touch ID, which is secure. And if you want to make sure that none of that stuff is getting out anywhere, then using it with your iPhone is totally the way to go, which is another thing to think about, is that, you know, it's not just that Apple made the Apple Watch secure. Like, part of the reason that you hear us keep talking about security and encryption and Apple in the same sentence is because Apple has already built all of that into everything that they've already got out the door.
So the security message is stay with the big companies, Microsoft, Intel, Apple. Mm-hmm. Big companies take the trouble and the effort to do the security right.
Well, in this case, there's only one company that did the security right, and that's Apple. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right. So, but it's useful to know that if you want to make sure that your data is secure, having an iPhone is a really good way to do that, because that data is all secure. And Apple has come out and said, we don't know any of the stuff that you have on your phone, and we don't want to.
And I'm okay with that.
That's nice to hear.
Yes.
All right. So we're like really out of time, so yep. We have to wrap up. Kelly, thank you so much for being here.
Of course.
And John, thank you for being here too.
Quick PSA, the Super Bowl is not being broadcast in 4K, so do not run out and buy a 4K TV just for that. And with that, signing off.
Thanks for that important piece of information. And listeners, thank you for joining us. And let me know what you think. Are we getting overly concerned about fitness trackers and security and privacy? Let me know on Twitter. That would be at TMO Daily. Shoot me an email, observations@macobserver.com. Or leave comments in the show notes. I check all those places, and I love to hear what you guys have to say. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.